Right? Did you hit record?
Yeah, I did.
All right, I did too. Okay, so foolish man. Foolish, foolish man who keeps on taking on new challenges, throwing himself into areas of discomfort, frightening himself on purpose. Why are you doing this thing? Why do you want to take an improv class? Why do you want to stand up in front of people and have to come up with funny ideas on the fly? Nobody's good at that. Only gifted people are good at that, Rob.
But it's my understanding that if you stand close to the gifted people, they might sweat a little and you might get some on you or something. And then I could have some.
What is this? Is this medieval medicine that you're studying?
A little bit. Wait, science? No, okay. Maybe that's not the right way. I like to, let's see. It just has, I'm attracted to it. Like I get attracted to skills that seem like they would be useful, or that I can't tell if they wouldn't be, but I'm still kind of excited about them, right? Because so like going through an improv class has come up in a couple different things I've read over the years, and have, you know, heard people mention on podcasts and whatnot, and sometimes when you hear that kind of thing, it sounds like, oh, I can't do that. I don't know where I would even do that kind of thing. Who does that kind of thing? All that. And then I guess now I guess I've run into it enough where I'm just saying, okay, now I'm curious. I'm looking around, and I did notice there is one place local in the Twin Cities, but I'm trying to see if there's multiple options so I can evaluate a little bit more.
Oh, so you don't want a single point of, how does the expression go? Single point of feedback, single point of.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to just go, oh, there's one.
A couple episodes ago, take that one opinion and run. Yeah.
Yeah. Or take that one option and run.
Yeah, exactly. You're funny. So what, I don't know, improv, does it really sound
you,
that?
You know that I applaud you for looking into it and eventually doing it. You know.
For being a lovable, overcommitting goofball. I know.
I think it's a fabulous idea that more visual storytellers should be doing. A, you're learning storytelling. You're improvising story. And if nothing else, even if you suck at it, you are going to find out that, hey, guess what? On the fly, I can come up with ideas. That's why you do things like the 30 characters challenge. That's why you do things like the NaNoWriMo, right? Yeah. It's to remind yourself that this stuff flows from you naturally if you can get yourself into the state where you let it flow and don't edit yourself, right? And that's what improv is. So that's one. That's a built-in benefit you get no matter what. But also, I just think more of us visual storytellers should learn to be personalities. And I don't mean that in a manufactured way. Mm. I mean cultivating who you really are and learning to express that verbally, visually, and not just through your art, but also in mixed company, because you need it a lot in order
to. Yeah, I mean, to be able to tell a fun and engaging story in with people that you just met in the same way, with the same level of comfort as if you were with your closest friends of many decades, right?
Yeah.
That would be great. So part of it is, comfort in those kind of situations and adaptability and whatnot. But I think improv presents a different context for adaptability, because I think I can do antisocial adaptability when I'm doing 30 characters in 30 days and then sharing a thing of like, here's a thing I made. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we chat a little, you know, here and there. So different folks notice a thing I made and then we talk, right? That's cool. But it's not inherently the sort of, the same muscles as when you're face to face with someone and in the moment, on the spot, because like I could hit undo to my heart's content when I'm working on a drawing that's digital or whatever, or but there's no way to sort of control time in that same fashion when you're right there with someone.
Charm school
also.
I mean, that's what it was called 100 years ago, right? You sent young people to charm school to learn how to interact in the real world, how to fit in polite society, right? And however you want to spin it. You could spin it as like, oh, we're turning our children into phony automatons who just observe the proprieties and whatnot. But it also helps establish context for different situations, right? We all agree, no matter how honest we want to be with the world, no matter how we give you the unfiltered me, we all agree that if you're in a job interview, it's not the time to be cutting loose a big loud fart, right?
Right, that's
an inappropriate event for that context, right? So like, you could think of it that way too, is learning public speaking or public performance prepares you for job interviews, right? Because if you can be, even if you're acting, if you can be relaxed in that chair and comfortably listen to what the interviewer is asking you, decoding and looking for the subtext, or if there's any subtext in there, getting at what are they really asking me with that, giving just the right answer just then.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill, man. That's a skill, and I bet you you'd pick up, even you'd refine and polish that skill through improv, right?
Well, and there's an interesting aspect with the improv where the creative act is not just yours. And it's this shared experience where you are essentially working with someone to create something. So that's yet another different, distinctive aspect of it. And and in a job interview, so if someone asks you a question about, so you want to illustrate for, this established series, and we like your art, but we want to see if you fit with the team. We've got this, whatever. And then all of a sudden they asked you a question that you thought maybe didn't quite highlight what you wanted to highlight. You could take a few different tacks with that, right? You could say, I think you meant to ask me this, which would kind of cut the person off, and it sort of makes an exclusive thing. Like what they provided is in this dumb area, and what you're saying is in a smart area, or something like that. It'd be easy and risky or you run the risk of causing that sort of disconnect. Whereas you could just connect with it and embrace it and say like, absolutely. And regarding that situation, and also, and then all of a sudden you're extending it, the classic yes. And, which is a thing that you get to practice with improv. So I understand.
Yeah.
So I've heard
that a lot, which is very Buddhist, right? This world as it is the golden lotus of perfection. This is whatever you throw at me is fine. I reject none of it. Mm. I take it and I run with it and I roll with it and I leverage it into whatever I need it to be. For whatever the moment needs, and living in the moment. Living in the moment is another thing, right? Mm-hmm. Being aware of the moment. How many times a day are you really in the moment, right? Where you're like hyper aware of everything that's happening around you. I zone out when I'm driving, right? I'll be like, how did my body know to stop at that red light? Because I didn't tell it to just now, right? It just did it. It's like autonomic at this point. And I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't going like, oh, red light, foot, better hit that brake, right?
Yeah.
I'm not in the moment all the time. So that's another thing.
Is that it's a combination of things. So we have our, I know if you're going to practice meditating, you will eventually work on quieting that voice. Maybe you have some commentary going on, but I would say also you're trusting your body as well as, I mean, so you're not dismissing some other, this is a big bee in my bonnet lately, not a bee, but it's because I actually want to live with this thing and I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah. It's more like a gazoo that showed up on my shoulder. the sort of the holistic cognition thing of, considering the rational, emotional, and instinctual aspect of stuff and how useful that is. But so like in that moment, I would argue there's aspects of your reflexes, your instinct, and your probably not rational, but emotional. Like, so the long-term memory and stuff were just taking care of it. They were very present. But then getting them all to agree and be totally in the same spot at the same time.
Well, that's practice.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's not easy.
The dancer becomes the dance, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dancer becomes a dance until they remember what was on the grocery list.
Right. I don't remember if I told this story before, but when I was a blackjack dealer and you're dealing just round a round of cards for 8 hours at a go. And a round of cards only lasts about maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute, maybe a minute, you know? So that's a lot of hands of cards you're dealing, right?
Holy
And you're counting, right? It's your job as the dealer to count the cards. So if you've got a 7 and a 5, what is that? 13, right? And you have to call out all those. You got like 8 different hands on the table. You got to call out, and you got, as you're adding cards, you're also adding up, right? And then you're also calculating payments. A blackjack pays time and a half. So if they've got $25 on there, you got to pay them $25 plus $12.50. So it becomes $37.50. You got to pay them, right? So you're doing a ton of calculating. So it seems like, oh, you got to be really present for this. I did this for several years, and I noticed after a while, I would just go into autopilot, and my brain would go someplace completely else.
Whoa.
And like, from all appearances, it looked absolutely professional. I was moving very smoothly. I was calculating everything correctly. Nobody was calling me out. And this would happen every once in a while, where I would go into like this weird special place where it's like, away from all of this hated gambling. And then all of a sudden I would come to in the middle of a round, I would become present again, and I had no idea what was going on. Like all of a sudden I would freeze, and my fingers would just be pointed at a hand, and they'd be like, yeah, I said, hit me. I'm like, suddenly I came back into focus. God. It was so weird when that would happen. But yeah, you know, you practice anything enough and then your body can just sort of do it for you.
Yeah. I think that is a great thing to trust in. when you can get that. It's not like you're thinking through every line on a page, and that would be more mindful if you were totally somehow going, this is a line, this is whatever. I don't know what you would do.
And when I talk about being present in the moment, one of the things that I was thinking about is, and I posted this on the Leonthar Tumblr, David Say recently wrote another one of his wonderful journal entries about breaking out of thinking loops. And he was talking about this whole thing about he woke up in the morning, he's tired, it's cold in the apartment, he's in this nice warm bed, and he's got an unpleasant task that he has to do that needs to be done today. And so it starts out with, I don't want to get out of bed, I'm warm here, it's cold out there, I don't want to do that thing, but I gotta do that thing, so I gotta get out of the bed, and I gotta go do these 3 steps till I can do this thing. I don't want to get out of bed. He's in this continuous cycle. And then he said, like, he experimented with this idea of taking the I out of that thinking. Not, I don't want to get out of bed. It's cold. There's this thing that needs to be done. And see how that changes the way he approaches it. And it helped him break this cycle of continuously thinking about, like, what his immediate wants, immediate desires are, and thinking about the day in a more long-term, kind of bigger picture kind of way. And he even said himself, he's like, maybe this is meditation, I don't know. And it's totally meditation. Meditation is, because the Taoists believe that walking is meditation, right? They didn't believe that you should just necessarily just be rooted to the ground and sitting in this lotus position in this very martial way. Their idea of meditation was being absolutely present. Absolutely present meaning removing yourself and your ego from what you're observing, what you're seeing. So when you look at a tree, you're not saying, that is a beautiful tree, I like that tree. You're just saying, that is a tree, there is light hitting it, and I'm looking at it in a much more objective way, which in its own way is a kind of aesthetic beauty, right? You're reflecting on the beauty of that such a thing should exist, and that I get to see it, or that this body gets to see it, or however you want to phrase it. But it's removing that personal reaction to it, right? That's a form of meditation as well. And so that's the kind of presence I would imagine that you would polish in a improv situation, because you don't get to say, oh no, they brought Count Chocula, I hate Count Chocula, I don't, where are we gonna go with this thing? No, you have to just take it, okay, Count Chocula, what do I do with that, right? That's a kind of different kind of being present in the moment.
It is.
I'm saying I'm excited for you, Rob.
Well, thanks. And I'm here joking along with you with it. And actually, I'm excited too. All that stuff at the same time. I know it's kind of, So jumping to taking a different angle on this, what do we, I don't have a better way to phrase this other than it's an ongoing learning kind of thing where I'm excited about this thing. I have questions about, I want to find the right resource or all resource that can help me with this. And then I go about it. I mean, that's how I continue to grow and learn. I would guarantee you, like what's something on your list that you're looking to grow and learn with?
Oh, a list to grow and learn.
Totally on the spot, but
yeah, I wasn't expecting that one. But that's good. That's good. You scared me. I like it. no, I do, man. I do. I like being shaken up a little bit intellectually. Yeah. I mean, I've got dumb things. Like, man, I wish I could find the time to really sit down and learn a musical instrument. I know that would help with my clarity of thinking. It would help with my dexterity. It would help get me out of the chair, you know, because I've been pulling some long days at the art desk. Mm. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling it in my thighs, which is weird. Like, the backs of my thighs start to really hurt after, like, a 16-hour day.
Live by the desk, die by the desk kind of thing. I think about that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just like one of those things where it's like, oh, I should learn how to fly a plane or I should, you know, take up a martial art again. But in terms of like thinking skill sets, an improv class is actually something that's been on my short list for years. It's like, that's something I'd like to pull the trigger on eventually because I don't think I'd be great at it. But I think I'd be like,
planted that seed. I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, I remember chatting with you a few months ago about this.
Oh, really?
You mentioned maybe chatting with some friends. You're like, yeah, it'd be cool to take an improv class. And then, I don't know. Anyway, I think you planted the seed, sir. That's awesome. I don't know.
I take no credit. Anyway. But it's something I thought about in the past just because I think I'd be okay at it. It'd be nothing that I would think like, I'm going to be great at this.
Yeah. It'd be a lot of fun though, right? I mean, that's the, to see where it went. I'm not presuming I decided to learn something. Of course I will be perfect.
Well, that helps. That helps if you think like, I'd probably be okay at it. I'm not going to totally suck at it my first time out. Right. It helps you too. Cause okay. So let's go back to an old story, you know, that when I started doing those Ignite talks, and I keep flirting with the temptation to do it again, but then I look at my schedule and go, ugh, I don't have time. I went into it going like, oh, I've done podcasting for years. Oh, it'll be a breeze. How hard can it be? And then I practiced a little bit and I'm like, okay, this is pretty good. And then there was that second before I walked out onto the stage where my whole body froze and my brain screamed, what are you doing? You know, so like there was that, you know, gripping terror about going in front of 500 people and say a thing. But what got me to that point was a sense of, I can do this. It'll be fun, right? It's not that scary or it's not that much of a threat to me, you know? And that's why I flirted with the improv thing. It's not that scary. Whereas like, you know, going on a long swim, scary, jumping out of a plane, scary. No, I'm not going to do that. I don't think whatever benefits I get, would that be enough of a reward for all the fear that I would feel before going into that situation?
Sure. Too much negative stress, not enough positive stress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I gotta think about this now, Rob.
It's not easy. Like, I think it took me a little while before I got really excited and landed on this one. I'm like, yep, for sure, this is the next one, right? And it was kind of like I was sort of shopping in the back of my head for like what it would be, and just in the last couple, you know, this week or so, I'm like, yep, gonna do it. Just gotta figure out when.
That's cool.
So, and then after that, maybe it'll be more improv. Maybe it'll be something else. I don't know. But there's always something else.
There's always something else. That is an exciting part of this whole thing. And you know, sometimes the something else finds you, right?
exactly. Adapt or else.
Yeah. You know, the teaching thing, I fell into it. That wasn't something I sought out. That was something literally where I said, I need the money. And then I did it, and I was, and then I found out that it was fun, it was rewarding, and I was kind of good at it. And then I kept going, right? The podcasting is a direct result of that. The podcasting is a result of me going, man, I need the money. I better start teaching, right?
Wild how that stuff ends up, right? I mean, it's the planning, the planning. I love planning, but like obviously there's sort of a, there's a point where it's a, it becomes a very hypothetical game. Mm-hmm. And I think it still has a value to it, but like I look at exactly, especially when you start reflecting on your path and how you got to where you're at and whatever. I mean, how would you have exactly planned where to end up in that position?
No, there's no way I could have. I didn't even know about the job. It was a friend, like an acquaintance, who forwarded on the job listing to me. Right. And just at a moment where I was in really big trouble financially. Mm. Right. So like I was pushed in that direction by outside forces, which is probably why we like stories that do that. Right. Like Luke Skywalker doesn't like go, he doesn't wake up one morning and go, you know what? I'm going to be a Jedi.
Yeah. Right.
Outside forces kind of push him in that direction. And then that's, I think that, that that kind of narrative is compelling to us because, yeah, a lot of times that does happen to us.
I think the big hack is then trying to be your be one of the outside forces, right?
Yeah.
Because then you can, you have, I like to cause circumstance where it keeps me adapting.
Me too. I like that a lot. I like, a credo that I've tried to live by for the last couple of years is if I'm scared, I'm doing something interesting. And if I'm emotionally uncomfortable, it means I'm doing something interesting. And that's a way that I try to flip the whole situation so I'm not being a victim to it, right? Like, oh, I said something that might have hurt a friend's feelings. Well, I'm doing something interesting now because now I get to find out this whole new way to interact with this friend as I try to make this thing right, mm-hmm. right? So that's my boring grown-up way of dealing with it. I was having a conversation with a former student who's now entering her 20s, and she's in a situation where a friend was asking her to do some work for free. And right, and it was a non-trivial amount of work, right? It wasn't like doodle me a thing. It was like this was going to be 15 hours worth of work. And so I said to her, I'm like, well, what did you say? She's like, well, I agreed to it because I didn't know, you know, what I should do. I'm like, well, you really shouldn't have. You should have pointed out what the value of this thing was, and you should have pointed out how many hours this person was asking of you, but you've committed to it now, so you got to do it, right? Then she came back to me later on and was showing me some of the stuff that she completed, and it was all good and everything. She's like, yeah, but here's the problem. They liked it so much. Now they want me to do another one. And I was like, what did you say? She's like, I don't know. I haven't said anything yet. And I said, well, here's what's going to happen. I said, you can do a lot of things in this world. You can write things and draw things that I'm philosophically opposed to, but the only way you're going to be able to disappoint me in this world is if you continue to undercharge for your work. I said, so you're going to go back to this guy, and you're going to figure out what a fair wage is. You're going to calculate the time. You're going to figure out what a fair wage is, and you're going to tell him this is what this thing is worth. And she's like, well, but he's my friend. And I'm like, if he's your friend, he will understand. And then I was like, and I stopped it. I was like, I know I just totally talked like a boring old grown-up just now, and I'm really sorry, but that's the truth of it. If he's truly your friend, he'll be cool with that. I don't know why I got on that jag. I think it was just reflecting that I'm talking in boring old man platitudes. Can we talk about RoboForce real quick?
Yeah. I think it had to do with learning and stuff, right?
So. Okay. That's the title for this one. The title for this one is, I think it had to do with learning and stuff.
Perfect. So RoboForce, what the heck? Somebody
go to iTunes and leave a review for Lead Into Art that reads that. I think it was something about learning and stuff.
Okay.
That's the next t-shirt. Yeah. So I just wanted to make a brief announcement that this RoboForce comic that I've been working on for the past several months is finally coming out and updating online. So toyfinity.com, toyfinity.
All right. Yes, I think I have it up in one of my browser tabs here.
I just want to let people know, because I don't, a lot of the stuff I work on, I don't get to tell the world about, right? Like when I'm storyboarding for commercials, first of all, nobody's going to care. And secondly, it's nothing I can post online anyway. This is finally something that I can, you know, talk about publicly. So that's awesome. And I'm very excited about it.
Sweet. Yeah, this is awesome. I just went to toyfinity.com, though, and I'm trying to find the actual
The UI is not great. It's in the sidebar. There's a comics link.
Comics. Then RoboForce is back. Max Zero. And then there we go. Yeah, and this beautiful, obviously, the initial setting page. It's two pages out right now.
That's all that's out right now.
But they're amazing sort of set pieces that are... Yeah. Oh my gosh, this two page spread is nuts and amazing.
It's two pages that take about maybe 6 seconds tops to read, but there's a lot of time put on those. Not that I don't want to glamorize that part. I don't want to glamorize the.
It's
amount
a thing. It's a little bit of friction though, right? Like when you make a comic and right, and so it's been established. You are. Obviously skilled and fast at what you do compared to others. And, that anyway, so even at that more rapid speed than, you know, the average comic creator, that still is wild where you make something and someone reads it and it's like, yeah, it takes like a few seconds.
Well, it's partially that I made it more work than it had to be because it's RoboForce, right? Mm-hmm. I think I told the writer of the book initially that like, oh, I'm going to find some shortcuts to speed this up. And I did try, but in the end it, oh God, this is lame. But I was like, I don't want to let Max down. I don't want to let him down by doing a hack and slash job of this. I got to do my best, man. I keep coming back to this thing and it's totally, this is all in my head. This is all, and I want to. I'm saying this not to say by my own great fault, but to say that I'm owning this. Okay, I know this is nobody else's fault. This is my thing. It's my own cross, and I just got to live with it. Is that I don't ever want to say to a kid, like some 20-year-old comes up to me and is like, "Oh, when I was 10, I was reading this thing you did, and I just loved it, and I found all these wonderful things in it that really moved me." I don't ever want to say to that kid that, "Oh, that I was just hacking that out." That was just a job, you know. I don't want to lie, but I want to honor that kid's reaction to it by saying, "Oh, thank you. I poured my guts into that thing," you know. So yeah, like when I'm working on this, it's the same feeling. This feeling of responsibility to something that is like precious to a lot of people. So I want to give it everything I got. And if anything, people can criticize it, like, oh, I hate his art or I hate the color choices he makes. That's fine. That's a taste thing. But I don't want anybody to be able to say, like, well, you can tell he was just phoning it in, right? So I made it harder than it had to be. But, you know, it's the old saying, I hate writing, but I love having written. I look at the pages, I'm like, oh, those look pretty good. Boy, were they hard. and it's funny, the first two pages are the ones where I put everything. I mean, I came in like a wrestler and just like screamed into the ring. And then the preceding pages are like much easier on me than those first two.
Well, it makes a great first impression.
I hope so. But anyway, if people want to see what I've drawn most recently, that I can actually show anybody, there it is, toyfinity.com. It's going to be updating weekly for a while, and he's working on the script for book two. So, exciting. RoboForce.
That is way cool. Yeah. Working on something that you love and putting all you got into it.